I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
During the Right Rug Flooring Anniversary Sale, we're celebrating 91 years of the guaranteed lowest prices. With beautiful carpet with a lifetime stain warranty starting at $219 a square foot installed with pad. And luxury vinyl starts at $399 a square foot installed. Unbeatable prices and 24-month special financing available with approved credit. Schedule a free in-home appointment with our flooring experts at RITERUG.com. Right Rug Flooring's Anniversary Sale.
Right.
Today's show is sponsored by Cressida of Luna Rose, who is a spiritual coach and mentor. Here she is to tell you a little bit more about what she does.
Hi there, this is Cressida, aka Luna Rose on Instagram, and I run a small business that is geared to empowering and supporting women in their spiritual journey and how that translates into everyday life. I'm here to tell you about a free 5-day challenge that I'm running as of Monday, 26th of October. And it's all about how to grow your intuition. So you'll be getting tips and tricks every day into your inbox. And I really hope that you'll come along to join me on this journey. Just head to my Instagram __ Luna Rose and you'll find the link in my bio. See you there.
And if you want to become a sponsor, please contact us by email via the website screamingwithlaughter.com. Well, let's dive into this week's episode.
This is the Funny Mummies podcast, the podcast for people that hate parenting podcasts. I'm Hattie Ashdown, comedian, writer, actress and mother to two very lively boys. Each show, I'm joined by funny mummies from the world of comedy, arts, and everyone who can help us in this crazy world of parenting. So settle in as we find the funny side of parenting and being bloody great women.
Hello, welcome to Funny Mummies podcast for The Other Woman Show on Soho Radio. I'm your host, Hattie Ashdown, and today's show is another chat to hear Funny Mummies' birth story and joining me to mop their brow, give them positive affirmations, or screw that, demand more drugs. It's my favourite birthing partner, Gemma Beagley.
Hi.
A bit of a different intro for you there, Gemma, just spicing things up. So we've got a guest today, and because they've had enough of our birth stories, is she's a writer and performer. She wrote and starred in BBC Radio 4's Mission Improbable with her all-female sketch group, The Boom Jennies. She's a winner of the BAFTA Rockcliffe New Writings Award. She's a very new mum of one, a lockdown baby no less. Can't wait to hear about that. Please welcome Lizzie Bates.
Hi.
I've just realised you've got Lizzie Lynn on your...
It's very confusing. So my married name is Lynn, but I couldn't work out how to change my Hotmail account so that the actual address is Lynn. So it's very confusing. So you've got Bates and Lynn.
Just have it. But is Bates and still your professional name, as it were? Your star
Exactly. I haven't really changed my professional name. So there you go.
Yeah, I didn't. Keep it. Well, thank you so much, because
thanks,
we know your baby's only 4 months old. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. He's a little wee one.
It's a wee one. If he cries, please don't worry about bringing him on camera. That's me trying to get a little look.
Let me see your baby.
That's the only thing we can do. I can't hold any new babies at the moment. I hate it. Let's go back a bit then, because we particularly want to talk to you because obviously we've not had any lockdown birthers because we've not been in a pandemic before. Not in my lifetime. And so, you know, we've had lots of different birth stories and would love to hear about your, you know, experience. But maybe let's go back a little bit then, because we also haven't really had anyone who's can I, you know, you told me before about the you have to go through IVF.
Yeah, yeah.
And we I don't think we've talked to anyone to do with IVF. Tell us, can you tell us why you had to go on that journey?
Yeah, so we were trying for about 3.5 years to get pregnant, had lots of tests done and stuff, and there was no real reason. We don't really know why. So I fall into the category of unexplained infertility, or I should say we both do, which is really hard. It's a really hard sort of diagnosis because you don't know what the problem is and you can't fix, you don't know, you know, how to fix it. So we sort of tried for years, and then we ended up doing some IUIs, which is kind of a precursor to IVF, where they essentially inseminate you with your husband's sperm.
Right.
But at the right time, they sort of go up through past the cervix. And but that didn't work for us. And that, yeah, that was one of my most traumatizing experiences, actually, because I got a speculum stuck up me. They couldn't get it out. That was very painful.
Oh, blimey.
And then we moved on to IVF, and our first round, we had to cancel it because I didn't respond to the drugs. So I'd sort of found out that I've got low ovarian reserves, which isn't why I couldn't get pregnant. But I just didn't necessarily have that long left kind of thing. And I mean, to have a baby, not to live.
Right.
We had to cancel the first round because I didn't respond. And that was that, yeah, that was a really dark time because that was sort of me coming to terms with the idea that I might not be able to have my own biological baby.
And was this thing, you know, like, how long have you been together then with your...
So we've been together 8 years and we got married after 4. So, okay. Yeah.
So was it something you always wanted to do, always wanted to have kids, or was you, because obviously
you're
busy with your career and...
No, definitely. No, I'd wanted to have them for ages. And I think I was a bit panicked about it before we started trying, which probably didn't help matters, you know. Mm. Anyway, long story short, we did IVF. First couple of goes didn't work. And then the last one, luckily, I actually ended up taking steroids and a load of stuff. Of this whole theory around like your body, like inflammation in your body being a problem, and that you kind of reject the embryo. So I took like anti-inflammatory drugs like steroids and stuff to help me try and like accept the fetus. And I don't know what did the trick, but anyway, it worked.
How many times round was this then that you have to do?
So we did one egg collection, and then we ended up with 3 embryos, and Frank was the last embryo.
Oh, of course he was. Yeah. And all this is going on, you've got normal life going on. So, you know, what was going on? Was you performing? Or...
No, well, I was thinking about this earlier when I was like, you know, in terms of the comedy, it was, you know, it was pretty hard to try and, I think it's really hard to get on with life generally when you're sort of going through that stuff. But trying to be funny and trying to write funny stuff, it's definitely a challenge when you're sort of like heartbroken and like dealing with these.
And you've got hormones being pumped into you.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Totally. It's the physical side of it as well. Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, your estrogen is like 3,000 times higher than it naturally would be or something. I've just made that number. But, you know, yeah, it's hard. And
we don't check facts on
every day and all that. I actually found the physical stuff fine. It's like the mental side of it that's really tough.
I suppose, can I ask, I think it's just, I guess, because I guess the medicine's got better, and so and this doesn't come to, you know, happy news to anybody who isn't able to get pregnant through IVF, but you know, I know lots of people who've gone through IVF. And what advice would you give the friends of people who are going through IVF, you know, because I know for me, I mean, just one. Should a friend ask the woman and say, do you want to talk about it or not? Or, you know.
It's funny because I think some people are really private about it, aren't they? Like, it's an insanely personal thing to be going through. And I think there's like so much shame attached to it, you know, I can't get pregnant, and you feel like a bit of a failure, whatever. But for me, I just wanted to talk about it all the time. Firstly, because there's such a stigma around it. And I just think, you know, just, I hate that. Because, you know, you talk to people and you find out so many people struggled or going through problems. And I always used to presume, oh, everyone had found it really easy. But they haven't. They've, you know, like, what, one in four women have pregnancy ends in miscarriage. Like, so I personally always wanted to talk about it. But I think my advice, would be absolutely ask. They can always say, look, do you know what, I'd rather not talk about it. But the worst thing. I had friends who didn't want to ask me. And I think because they were nervous about that. But it hurts. Like, when you're trying to... You're putting a face on, and you're trying to be normal, but in the back of your mind, it's like, there's this huge elephant in the room I just want to talk about. And as soon as someone says, you know, how are you, or what's happening, and you can sort of talk about it, you're like, oh, I feel like I can be myself now.
Oh, very interesting.
So, yeah, I think definitely asking is the way forward.
Mm. So, got pregnant. And so you started growing this beautiful baby, and the pregnancy was, you know, obviously you were nervous, but
in fact, like, it actually started off rather than doing like a pregnancy test, they do a blood test to see what your HCG hormone level is, and it was really low, and our consultant actually said to us, this isn't going to be a viable pregnancy, like, don't get your hopes up, this will end in miscarriage somewhere down the line you come off these drugs. But I felt different, having had like an early sort of chemical pregnancy before, and also failed IVF, and having never been pregnant before, I was like, I actually do feel different. I think maybe this, like, I'm going to take what he says with a pinch of salt. And then that, like, the hormone levels like all leapt up, and he was like, oh, okay. Maybe. Wow. And then it stuck. So it was a nerve-wracking start to the pregnancy, and then I was very lucky. I had a very straightforward pregnancy, really. Felt fine.
Able to enjoy it. Oh, that's so nice.
Until, of course, coronavirus.
Yes. So right? Whereabouts was you in sort of March then? Where happened you then?
I can't remember exactly, but I definitely fell in the...
March 2020 for any people listening in the future.
Yeah, I know when they announced pregnant women were going to have to kind of shield, I was definitely in the category of like third trimester. And I think when they said, we're expecting the peak of the epidemic to be in about 10 weeks time. And I was due in 11 weeks. So I was like... panic stations, basically. Yeah, it was scary. I did cry a lot that day, thinking, oh God, you know, what's my birth going to look like? And it was scary for everyone, wasn't it, at the beginning? It was really scary.
And so at this point, you were put, I've had two, and my youngest is two, and I already can't remember the different processes of when they... I remember my second one actually going, when are we going to talk about what the birth plan? I was more keen with the second one because I knew what I wanted to do, I think. So at this point, had you started to think about what you wanted for your birth, or was it already pre-planned for you?
Yeah, because it was IVF, their policy was if you haven't had it by your due date, then we induce you.
Oh, really?
Because there's this theory that the placenta is less viable, like reliable, don't know, resilient, less likely to, like, more likely to fail than with a spontaneous pregnancy.
That's mad.
So
Okay.
And also we'd found out that he was measuring in the 98th centile anyway. So I was quite keen to not hang around and let him go anymore.
Yeah.
So Yeah, including his head. The sonographer was like, yeah, his head's in the 98th centile.
Right.
Wow. So
what was your plan sort of birth plan? Yeah, so, did it all change once the pandemic was announced?
Not really. I guess what did change was we didn't know how much of the birth Duncan was going to be able to be at. That was the big thing. I had to get my head around the fact that I was going to have to spend time in hospital on my own. And after the birth, they were saying the partners can stay for 2 hours or something and then they have to leave. So, and because I was being induced, I knew I was going to have to be in hospital before the birth and I knew I was going to have to do that on my own. And so early labour was going to be on my own. So that was kind of, yeah, just getting my head around that. But to be honest, with everything we've been through up to this point, I felt like, you know, I could handle it.
Yeah.
And then a bit of a game changer, Duncan actually got coronavirus. So we'd been self-isolating or like socially distancing for 2 weeks. Being really careful, basically just two of us in the house and like, just pop into the corner shop kind of thing. And then he got a high temperature. So we were like, shit. And we'd actually talked about what we were going to do if that happened. And luckily my parents have like an empty granny annex on their house. So I did a Dominic Cummings and I drove to stay there so that we didn't expose the baby. We were just worried about the baby basically.
Oh, so this is after you've had the baby.
No, this one I was pregnant.
Oh, right. Okay.
And anyway, so he was really quite ill for 10 days. And so we had 2 weeks apart. I luckily didn't come down with symptoms.
What week was this? How many weeks pregnant were you when he got corona?
It was in March, so, and I had the baby early June. So what was I, 28 weeks or something. Oh, I don't know. I can't remember. I get confused with the weeks.
Yeah.
but anyway, pretty pregnant. But that was kind of a bit, I don't know, it was almost a relief. And that sounds insensitive to say when I know so many people have had such a horrendous time and lost loved ones. But he was okay. And then we knew, hopefully, I hadn't got it. And I'd been like super exposed to it. And I just
licking
felt
each other's faces before.
Well, I was a bit like, we definitely hadn't snogged for quite some time. and then we knew that he, hopefully, fingers crossed, would actually be able to come to the birth, because of course there's like the risk that your partner gets it just before you're due to give birth and then they can't be there and women are having to give birth on their own.
Gosh. So, okay, so he's getting bigger and so they've said you've got to come in to be induced. So what was it like? I mean, again, it's weird because you've not had a birth out of pandemic, but you tell us and we'll tell you how that relates differently.
Yeah, well, firstly, they changed the induction process because of COVID. So normally you'd go in and you'd have the pessaries, the prostaglandin pessaries.
Ooh, well done.
Knows all the lingo.
She does. I just always say the pet.
I did actually look that up this afternoon because I wanted to. Have him.
I love you.
I've probably got the word wrong as well. So instead of that, they were using the balloon technique, which is basically where they insert a small balloon into your cervix, and then they pump water up into it. And then that expands your cervix, so to help you dilate, basically
I've never heard of that. Have you, Gemma?
I feel like I have, but
I feel like yes, in the 1940s. Are you sure like wasn't on the set of Call the Midwife?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But it feels like, okay. So it's a water balloon.
I like it though; it's all very natural,
isn't it? Oh, yeah, she could have blown up.
Yeah. It's and then
I think I went to that show in Bangkok.
It's like a smear test. They kind of put the thing up and then they shove this thing in, and then they pump it with water. It's quite a painful procedure.
Oh, I bet.
And then they send you home, and you've got these like tubes hanging out of you, like all with different coloured ends. Like, it sort of made me think a bit like, you know, in a fondue set where it's got like the forks have different coloured.
Oh yeah.
About a bit like a fondue, upside down fondue.
I just had these
little tubes like hanging out, dangling.
I guess it was because there's the different, again, I should have researched this. I'm doing the bloody series on births and I didn't at all. But I know there's the different levels of the induced, isn't there? There's like the, oh, we'll just give you this mild one. So they must have given you the mild one then, because
this is what you're hoping it will bring on labour, basically.
Yeah.
And I did have lots of contractions that night, so I was like, yes, I'm not going to have the drip, you know, this is amazing. And then they all eased off. And it wasn't to be. So then the next day I went in and they said, okay, now we're gonna remove the balloon, and then you go up, they break your waters, and if your contractions don't start, then you have to have the drip, basically. But because the labor ward was so busy, so basically
the labor ward, like, in the ward, was it?
Well, yeah, so the last 2 weeks they'd been basically completely full, and midwife said to me, she thinks when coronavirus like really kicked off, lots of women who were due held on to their babies, so like there were a lot of late babies. Ooh. Apparently it happened in World War II as well, that like you instinctively as a pregnant woman, you know that your baby's safer inside than they are outside. There were a lot of overdue babies, and they think this is what happened. And then basically as things sort of got a bit better, everyone was like, time to drop them. That all coincided with me going in, so I basically had to wait overnight to get a room to be able to start the process. So I was just in there bouncing on a ball. And Duncan wasn't allowed to be, you know, I had to be my own for that.
Oh, God. And what was that like? Sorry, Gemma.
I mean, it was fine. I think by this point I was like, yeah, you know, it's happening. We've got there. Baby's coming. Yeah. Just wanted, you know, just exciting as well, isn't it? Because, you know, you're going to meet them. And
So he wasn't allowed to, but what they were going to, you have to tell him when you're like nearly there, or?
They're letting partners in for established labour.
Right.
So in the morning, at six in the morning, they kind of came and got me, took me up to the room, broke my waters, and then we called Duncan and he could come for that from then. And that was his 40th birthday that day.
And was he born that day?
No, he was born that day.
Oh, that's all right. That's probably better, don't you?
Yeah, I don't know whether it's good or not, but So then they broke my waters, and then they said, okay, you've got like 4 hours to get labour started, and then we're going to start giving you the drip, basically. So I was kind of lunging around the room and bouncing on a ball, and no luck, sadly. So I had to have the evil drip.
When you say the evil drip, what's the evil drip?
I know, I keep calling it that because it's like it doesn't. So it's synthetic oxytocin, and it gives you contractions, but you don't have any of the like nice oxytocin like flooding around your system.
Okay, and I have heard of this, but no one we've talked to has had it, I don't think. No.
Yeah, and apparently they're just like contractions are really intense.
Yes,
a lot more painful, or certainly like from my experience. So I managed to do quite a few hours just with the breathing and like gas and air.
Yeah.
And then I just had this horrendous period where I was like, I was just breathing gas and air constantly. And I sort of, I remember just coming out and being like, what the fuck just happened? And I basically had, I was having contractions every, I was having like five every 10 minutes, but they weren't sort of going away in between either. So they were sort of dying down a bit, but not completely. So it was like a 10 minute long contraction, at which point I was like, get me an epidural.
And did they?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
And so your husband's there at this point.
Yeah.
And did he have to be like, what were the provisions like? Did he have to be all masked up and
stuff? No. He didn't have to be masked in the room. He did like when he went out, like if he went to get a tea or something, he had to put it on. But the midwife and the doctors and everyone were all wearing masks. Which actually, like, looking back on it, I don't know. I feel like I got such a good sense of, like, our midwife or midwives. I don't think it didn't bother me, but it must have been horrendous for them, like, trying to do it all.
Do you think? Well, I guess they're probably, used to it, but and it was all very new then. And did you have a good, it sounds like a weird question, but did you have a good relationship with your midwife? I mean.
Yeah, they were lovely. They were lovely. Yeah, we found out afterwards actually that she was only newly qualified, the one that actually delivered him.
Oh.
So yeah, that was kind of like
came out of the foo-foo, is it? As
I like how you're spreading your arms.
I am, because I'm literally like, because you have to be so careful. It's not like I'm saying, well, because things can take a turn, can't it? I mean,
yeah, no, we were really lucky. So I knew that it was going to be difficult to push him out with the epidural. So I like made the decision that I was going to stop it when I was fully dilated. So you're kind of administering it to yourself. You've got this like, amazing magic button where you
little
can
tap,
like,
keep that lovely little tap.
Yeah. So good. I was like, okay, I'm going to stop it. I'm going to stop it so I can feel the contractions. And then, managed to push him most of the way. And then I had a bit of trouble getting him around the U-bend because he did have a giant head.
Massive, 98% head.
Yeah. And I was sort of like in stirrups because I couldn't feel my legs, couldn't feel anything. So I was like, you know, legs akimbo in the air. And then I just had to have a nice little episiotomy at the end because his head wouldn't come out, basically.
Mm-hmm. I advise it. I think it's better than being torn, but that's a controversial conversation, maybe.
Well, yeah. He came out, and like talking of birth plans, I do remember like one of the things we put in the birth plan was we'd like
no COVID, please,
no COVID. We'd like to you not to tell us the gender of the baby. I think I sort of imagined this like Lion King style,
yes,
like lifting like Simba. What actually happened was I went, "Is that the baby?" And the midwife was like, "Yeah, here he is." And I was like, "It's a boy."
Oh, God.
And then she went, check for yourself. As if, you know, as if she'd just imagined a penis. But, yeah. But, you know, who cares? He was all right. So
he was out and he was well.
Yeah. And how much did he weigh, Lizzie?
He was 8 pounds, 11 ounces. Mm, no, he was
a nice big boy. Yeah, but he wasn't like... huge.
No, he was strapping lad, but he wasn't like, you know, I've been less
10 pounder.
He's all that head. That was what was weighing.
I know. He's still got this issue. He can't. He like, I try and give him tummy time, and he's got such a skinny little neck and a giant head. He's
youngest. I had the same. They wanted to induce me because he was getting big, and they were like, you know, his head looks quite big as well. And it's still, they said to me, but I don't know if they ever mentioned this, the horrible expression of shoulder dysmorphia or something. It's a horrible word, but which basically means they would have to like break their shoulders to get them out, which sounds horrendous.
No.
Yes, which, yeah, you said, because my nephew, he was so big that they had to break his shoulder. They dislocated it basically.
They didn't have to do it in the end. I got him out. I got him out. But he's still got. He's two, and his brother is five, and he's still got a big. He's got a bigger head than him. The other day, like you do, it's building a robot out of a box, and so I've made
That's lockdown all over, isn't it?
Oh, that's just everyday parenting for me, Lizzie. 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm making a robot. And so we've made a hole in the top of the box for his head, and he's put it on, it's fine. And then little two-year-old with the big head wants to turn, and I go, put it on, and we couldn't get him through. His head's so big. It's too big. I digress.
Well, the doctor told me when I went to a six-week checkup, and the doctor was like, that is a big head. That is, it's like 41 centimetres or something.
Thank you, doctor.
He said it's just an indicator that they're going to be tall.
Oh. So,
yeah, and, I'm just planning with that.
Yeah, is your husband tall?
Yeah, we're both tall. I'm tall as well. Tall and just really brainy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got somewhere to put it all. So you had the doctor's appointment. So yeah, that was going to be my next thing. I'm really interested in, you know, like I had so much lovely care afterwards.
Yeah.
And so how was all that? I mean
that was like the immediate aftermath. That was the hardest thing actually of the whole process, because Duncan was allowed to stay for basically a couple of hours. Like
they
stitched me up and then I had to stay overnight because of the induction. So they needed to like do obs on the baby.
Yes, they need to check your
I had him at 8 in the morning, so I basically had a whole 24 hours I knew I had to do on my own in hospital. And because of the epidural, I couldn't walk basically. So I was in a wheelchair. Nice. And I had a catheter. So I had this like piss bag that I was carrying around with me, or wheeling around. And so yeah, Duncan had to go. And they just took me up to the postnatal ward, and they kind of, and it was boiling hot. And they were like, right, you can't walk, so don't get out of bed, basically. Here you go. And I hadn't basically slept for two nights. I've been in hospital for two nights by that point. Hadn't eaten for 24 hours because you're not allowed to eat when you have the drip. And, you know, I was like bleeding everywhere, as you do. And I had this wee bag and this baby. And I remember just being like, how the fuck am I going to get through this next 24 hours? Like, I didn't know how to change a nappy even. I just remember thinking like, I can't be a martyr about this. Like, I made them bring me a fan, and like then they brought me like hot food and stuff, and that really helped. But I remember being like, where do I change his nappy? And then midwife was like, well, you just do it here. I was like, right. Well, can you get me some water, or like can you get them, help me get the nappies out of my suitcase, because I can't like bend down. And yeah, it was just
The ward quite quiet though? I've heard stories of people saying that the wards were quite calm and stuff though, because people weren't having many visitors.
It was busy when I got there, and then it cleared out. So I actually had the room to myself overnight. And then I think during the night they brought like a couple of C-section patients in and stuff. So it sort of filled up again. But yeah, I mean, in some ways it was like the most amazing thing in retrospect, because I got to really bond with Frank overnight.
Like just breastfeeding him then.
Yeah, like I just literally, he just latched all night pretty much. And I felt like I really bonded with him overnight. Mm. I mean, the main thing that Duncan missed out on there was the giant poo, you know, when they do that kind of
meconium.
Yeah.
Is that the good, that's the gold?
No,
the gold milk.
Yeah, meconium's the poo.
Yeah.
I do this like oily poo, don't they?
Yeah. Like, I took a photo of it to show him, because I was like, this is what you're getting away with. You're not having to deal with this. I mean, how does a tiny baby produce that much shit? It's just unbelievable. And then, in terms of like services since, like, we did, the health visitor came. We're lucky that our GP surgery actually is seeing new babies and mums, because I know a lot of them aren't, and they're doing over the phone.
Oh, really?
Patients. But there's no walk-in clinics and stuff. And actually, we worked out that Frank wasn't putting weight on like he should be, because I happened to weigh him at a mate's house. And
he's got on a Weight Watcher scales. I've seen some scammers just put it on.
It was just a mummy was more conscientious than me and had actually bothered to get some baby scales, whereas
really?
I just been like,
wow,
it's fine.
I never got any baby scales, so yeah.
Yeah, so I know I felt pretty bad about that. So then I went, yeah, and got him seen again, and then, you know, just went on a bit a mission, chub up mission. But I, yeah, so I don't, but then, like you say, you know, because I've never had a baby out of a global pandemic, I don't really know what's normal.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, and I think I remember that first time. I honestly did feel a bit like, don't go. Like, I made my husband stay overnight in this really uncomfortable chair, and he
leather chair.
Yeah. And I was, but I think that was just like, terrified. But then, to be honest, in the middle of the night, my milk came through. Well, I thought it was my milk coming through. It was not. It was not even the start of it, but it was just my boobs were in pain. And I couldn't wake him. He was so asleep. And I'm walking up and down the... So I was on my own anyway in a lot of senses. I was walking up and down, trying to find a midwife, going, my boobs are... I don't know what's going on, you know. So what I'm trying to say is I think we just pull on our reserves and then...
Yeah, and it may be like being forced to be on my own sort of made me just like, I don't know, kind of made me a bit tougher. Like, otherwise I would have been like, oh, you know.
I think when someone there, it makes you be more like, oh, like children do when they see their mum, they suddenly get more upset than when they're on their own with the teacher.
Exactly.
But I think there's something to be said. I mean, I think I said this on another episode. I wasn't talking about births, but I'd always quote my friend who's a midwife, and she said about, she loved it. Obviously didn't love a pandemic, but she just said how lovely and quiet the wards were. And she said the doorbell, you know, the bell that's normally going, because it's like dad's coming in and out. And she said breastfeeding rates were up, apparently, because mums were able to bond. And I just really, you know, love that idea. And if you watch Call the Midwife, like the earlier series, not when it moves into the 60s, when it's into the 40s. And it is funny, like watching all the ones where it's like dad has to get out. And Gemma will agree, like when she was giving birth. You didn't want him
around anyway. My friend who's a midwife said that her friend who was on the ward said that it was kind of this amazing sense of camaraderie, and that the curtains were all open and mums were like talking to each other, and like a mum of three was giving tips to like a new mum. And
got a little shiver then.
I did not have that experience necessarily. I had like two women who'd had C-sections and another woman who'd had like another kind of emergency procedure, and everyone was like in pain and struggling. Like, this woman had like dropped her phone on the floor and she was like, excuse me,
I
had to go and like give her a phone and help her with her pillow and stuff, because there was like no one around. I mean, obviously there were midwives, but I guess, you know, they're busy and they were probably like understaffed and stuff, because numbers were down for them as well. And
so their staff is down as well. Their staff is down, and then they're having to take more precautions, so they're, you know, cleaning more, you know, everything. It's just I think before we run out of time, all the other bits, unless there's anything else you wanted to tell us about the COVID birth experience.
I don't think so. I did try and remember all the stuff that was different because of it, but just looking at my notes. I did do some preparation.
Well, that's surprising. You're 4 months old. I mean, you can't remember your own name.
No, exactly. I was like, what did happen? No, I think that was anything. I mean, no, I think those are the main things. I think women are going to be going through it for a long time.
Yeah,
still, aren't they? And I would say, like, you know, don't worry, the hospital felt like an incredibly safe place, actually.
Yeah,
compared to the bloody supermarket or whatever, you know. It did feel very safe. It felt like, yeah, I didn't ever feel kind of worried when I was in there.
So you would say to anyone maybe listen to this who maybe his bat's going in.
Yeah, anyone who's worried about it. The other thing, well, and I think it's worth saying as well, like, I do think, and that there's kind of like petition at the moment. I don't actually know what the status of this is now, but like, there was a big petition about allowing birth partners into, yes, you know, all the prenatal appointments and stuff, because I do think it's like horrendous how partners can't go 12 week scans and stuff like that. You know, it's like the first time. Yeah, exactly. You know, you can, I can go to a yoga class with 10 different mums and babies, but a partner can't go to the 12 week scan and like meet, you know, see their baby for the first time. Or potentially, you know, there's mums out there who are receiving really
bird knows, like, of course.
And on their own.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just thought it's worth, you know, mentioning that.
Yeah.
Well, for future years when people are listening in on this podcast.
Well, now I just feel like I like to think of these as little time capsule now, when people will listen to them to learn about back time in the past.
I know, it's like living history.
And what did Hattie do? She just made a podcast when there was a pandemic.
She made robots out of boxes.
Yeah. talking of which, that's not a link to lies at all, but... It kind of is, because I was kind of like, bless him, didn't want him to make him feel bad. So I went, oh, let me just have a look. You know, didn't tell him that I had to cut it. I had to sort of like cut it to make it a bit bigger. Don't want him to make him feel bad. But yeah, we thought we'd try a new feature. It's sort of prompted by me in the pandemic. So yeah, I guess it has been inspired by the pandemic, the lies that we tell our children. And when I say the lies, they're not like, oh, you're adopted. I don't mean like the little lies. Because I sort of did that, because obviously the toy shops were closed, but I maybe sort of stretched that for quite a long time when my son kept saying, can we go to the toy shop? And so I was just chatting about it. And then my friend Josie Long has been on here a few times. She was saying about when her little girl hears the ice cream van. She what's that, mummy? Oh, it's a mobile disco. And so then I just got me thinking.
Well, it is in a way, isn't it?
But it kind of is, isn't it? So it just got me thinking about all the funny little lies. So I just wondered, but we thought, obviously, because your little one is 4 months old, it's not really any lies. But
I'm not also, lying to him yet.
Not yet. I'm interested also, and I was trying to think about this. I don't really know, because I'd have to ask her and I can't, sadly. But yeah, any lies that your parents told you and you found out?
Well, I was thinking
or realised later on.
Yeah, there was one that immediately came to mind, which was like, when I was little, I was really into the Beatles.
Right. How little are we talking?
I mean, the band, not the... Yeah. How little? Oh, like, I think primary school. Like, I just loved the Beatles and was like, yeah, I love this. Love
Is that because you were singing them at school?
I remember
singing them in primary school. Like,
I don't know.
Yellow Submarine and Obladi.
Yes, I did sing that at school. Yeah.
Obladi.
Anyway, I remember saying, I found out that John Lennon had died. And I said to my mum, how did John Lennon die? And she said he was hit by a bus.
Oh.
Why is that?
And so I think she must have panicked and thought, oh God, you know, I don't want her to think, you know, Years later, I was like, I don't know, I was a teenager, and I was like, yeah, and you know, like, John Lennon got like hit by a bus. And they were like, no, Lizzie. He didn't.
He was shot in the face.
Yeah,
he
was shot at his own daughter. So I went home to my mum and I was like, why did you tell me that John Lennon was hit by a bus? I've just been like richly humiliated. And she denied ever saying it.
Did she? She probably just forgotten because you just say these things.
Yeah, she's like, why would I have said that? I didn't say that. And I was like, well, yeah, why would you have said that? I mean, why would I remember you saying that if you hadn't said it?
Oh,
so yeah, but generally I don't think they did really, but and I don't know, because obviously I found that one out, but there may have been many others.
Next time you see him, ask him, is there any little white lies? Gemma, have you I've put you on the spot, but is there anything with Alistair that you've you've told him or tell him still? Oh God, I know you got to be careful. You got to be careful.
Yeah.
Okay, if anyone's listening to this with children in the background, this is a warning about a certain Christmas person.
Yeah, well, I don't know what happened, but yeah, Alistair said to me, he sort of came up to me, said, "Here, Mum," he said, "so Father Christmas isn't real." I said, "What?" He said, "Father Christmas isn't real. It's your parents that get you the presents." I said, "Oh." I said, "Well, so he was going to say, it's your mum was getting you presents." I said, "All right." I said, "Well, I don't get you presents, so I don't know what that's about." And yes, I said, "Where did you hear this from?" Danielle and some other arsehole kid, you think, oh, bloody
hell. Can I just say, everyone, he's only five. He's turned six yesterday, but at this point, yeah, he was five.
Anyway, I think I managed to act my way out of it and be like, "Well, I'm not buying them, so..." And the presents there.
It's a hard one. You don't want to then... you don't want to... Well, obviously, he is real, so he's got it wrong, for one. Can we just clear that up? But I think, yeah, people say there's like a bit...
It's like the cusp, isn't it? They're on the cusp of like, they want to believe it still, but they're not sure.
No, but that's what he said. He wants to believe it. Because yeah. I remember kind of working it out, but justifying it to myself, going, "Oh no, right." And whatever I did, yeah. I was about 8 or 9 going, yeah, "Right, okay, actually, I think maybe Mum gets some presents."
But yes, I did
the main
that.
Ones.
I
and that. That was me justifying it. You know, you sort of think, you know,
because
come on.
I remember it's like going in and out the closet almost, because I'm going, "I've worked it out," but then going, "Actually, but I still like that magic, please." So
yeah,
almost changing your mind. So anyway, the joys. So I don't know whether you've gone out at all yet, Lizzie. I mean,
not without the baby.
Any evenings? I mean, it's so early on, no. And I think 3 months in, my sister did that kind of like, "Oh, go out for a meal," and like, it was a really nice gesture, but I was so tired. We got a picture of us like asleep at the restaurant. Like, it's just not worth it.
No, and I think I'd worry about, I don't know. I did get my mum to give him a bottle yesterday. I was like lining her up, like, "Right, get practicing." But now, of course, she's not allowed to see him again. So, because of no household mixing.
Oh. I can't keep up. I'll be honest, like, I've been listening again, for those listening in the future. Today is the 15th of October, and I'm still trying. I was just sort of listening to the hospitality entertainment things because of like gigging and that. But yeah, and also the house thing, really. But she's not in counted as in your bubble? I don't know.
No, because we can't have a bubble. Isn't that just people who live on their own?
It is. So I can have a bubble because I'm a single. I'm single, right. Parent. But even if I didn't have a kid, I could bubble with somebody, with another family. But I can only bubble with one.
Okay, so we've gone back.
One other family.
Yes. Yeah. So I bubble with my mum.
But choose carefully, haven't you?
Well, yeah. And actually, I bubble with my mum, and I think, oh, it's one person. I could have bubbled with my mum's family, and then we're like 4 people. Crappy little shitty little 1-2 people bubble,
like playing it and like, oh, I wish I hadn't one person. Oh, gosh, okay, oh, bless
yeah.
her. Wow, yeah,
that's to. Really that's Liz, that's really tough.
That's
and
tough.
I
that's
just
a tough side of pandemic.
Yeah,
yeah. It is.
You know, they didn't cuddle him for weeks. I mean,
really?
I think technically they're still not allowed to, are they? Like, you're still meant to be socially distancing yeah. people that you don't live with. But it got to the point where I was like, come on, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, hand him round. You've got to give him a cuddle. Like, it's going to do him more harm.
Yeah.
Not having that kind of interaction with other people.
Yeah. So, I saw this really lovely thing that someone posted on Twitter where they'd had a baby right in March, I think. And so they would Zoom with the grandparents, like, and the grandparents would read a story every night, and there was a few photos of it happening, and there's like as the kids kind of start engaging, and that they've only ever seen their grandparents on the screen, but every night they read the story.
Yeah, my father-in-law does that.
That's lovely. God, I'm gonna cry. Right, let's think of happier times. So, but there's a beauty in that. We're finding the beauty in these times, and so we're gonna give you. Let's say it's a little bit way down the line, you're a bit more up for going out.
Yeah.
But basically we're gonna, I don't know, I know it's hard to think about that when you're breastfeeding, and obviously you're sort of like, I don't know if you're on demand or whatever, but yeah, it's really hard to think about leaving them. So let's maybe say it might be in a year or whenever you like. We can be whenever you like, but we're giving you free babysitting for the night. What are you gonna do? Where are you going to go? Who are you going with? What you're eating? What you're drinking?
Well, I think, so I really love swimming outside. That's like one of my passions. Okay. It's like in the sea or like an outdoor pool. Okay. And I remember like when I was doing fertility treatment, I used to go to this outdoor pool, and I'd see these pregnant women swimming, and I'd be like, when I'm pregnant, I'm going to do that, and it's going to be so nice. And then lockdown happened, and I basically couldn't do it. I couldn't go swimming, which was like a real sadness for me, because it's something that I'd always like really looked forward to. And then obviously you have a baby, and it's like not the easiest thing to do, is it?
Not
swimming on your own. I did do a bit in the summer, which was really nice.
Where did you go, Lizzie?
We went to Norfolk with some family, and so the North Sea. So I mean, not the most, you know, it would be my first choice, put it that way. But I think so what I would do is I would go to,
it could
like
be a day date if you like, go swimming in the day.
No, evening's good,
because
they open in the evening. Yeah,
lovely, beautiful.
I'd go to like Hampton Pool, and I'd have a lovely evening swim.
I'll put candles around for you, whatever you
or like
need.
Dusk and like the mist rising off the water, and I'd like immerse myself in the water and just feel. So that's the other thing about like when you've got a baby, you're kind of like holding them all the time, aren't you? And there's something about going in the water where you feel totally like, oh, like at one with your body, like reclaiming your body.
Yeah,
it's my body. And yeah, I think so I would do that, and then I would go to like one of our favourite pubs with my husband, and just probably get drunk on like two glasses of cava. Yeah.
Probably would.
And maybe have a sticky toffee pudding.
And you probably have a steak, I'm going to guess.
Oh yeah, maybe a steak. Yeah. No, well, there's this pub we love near us, and they do a really delicious goat curry. How do you feel about that, Hattie, as a vegetarian?
Poor little goat. I'd rather have a goat. I'd love to have a goat. I'm not one that, you know, to be honest, I love goat's cheese. So I'm not vegan. So I'll have the goat and have its milk and make cheese.
And then when you're done with it, I'll
Oh no. You're like my aunt.
Mutton isn't goat curry mutton generally?
Yeah,
it matters. You know, it's just an old sheep.
An old sheep.
Oh, don't worry about it. It's just an old sheep.
You're like my auntie. I had the classic, like, I was going to see one of my aunties every Sunday and feed her a rabbit, and then that thing of like the rabbit, and then, you know, what, Boopsy or whatever it was called, gone. And I was like, oh, where is he? He's like, oh, he's gone away. And then another one would appear. And that I've become friends with that, and then she'd send them away.
Yeah, it's lies.
The lies you tell children, you see. Just kind of, my aunties. Well, not so much my mum, my aunties. I'm gonna think up some more. I did it all the time. I think they loved it. On that note. So thank you so much. Before we let you go, is there anything you'd like you can promote about yourself or some other fantastic woman, or you're writing a bit of a sitcom, you said.
Yeah, well, so at the moment so I write with another lady, Anna Emerson, and she was in my sketch group, and we are writing some stuff together. So we've sent out our latest script at the moment, and we're kind of having meetings and stuff. So I'm hoping that that will go somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I'm working on an idea sort of about fertility. I mean, you tell this to a producer and or other people, other writers, and they're like, yeah, there's quite a lot of fertility ideas sort of going around. Like, but I just wanted to write about, you know, something that I'd
you can't let that stop you. Well, you know, and I, you know, I've had the same thing. If I'd listened to everyone, you know, you can't. It's your voice, and honestly, the amount of times different ideas I've put around, they go, "Oh, we've got one." Oh, it's so annoying. Yeah.
Oh, we've got an idea about women, actually.
Yeah. We did a women's thing 2 years ago now. Yeah. So.
We did get an email like that, something like that. Oh, we've already got one on our slate of like an all-female cast. I'm like, yes, I bet you've got five all-male casts, you know, all male.
Oh, I think I had that as well when I was doing for my beauty salon idea, and someone said, oh, you know, it's just got a lot of all-female. And then another excuse was, oh, we've got a similar thing because it's about a chip shop. Sorry, I didn't know a chip shop was like a flipping beauty salon. It's too fucking different. Anyway, don't get me started.
Oh, God.
You write what you want, Lizzie.
Yeah, I'm gonna. It's your voice, but darling.
Honestly, so many funny things happen to me. Like, you know, the things doctors say to you, that getting the speculum stuck up me, that was another classic. And just think, and a lot of people go through it as well, you know. Yeah. Something that, like, is, everybody knows somebody who's, like, had fertility issues, or is a parent or whatever. Obviously everybody knows someone who's a parent, but you know what I mean. So, and also, like, I wanted to, like, look into, like, the idea of choosing to be a solo mother, like, because so many people now are meeting their parents much later, and there's just like a surge in women like choosing to have babies on their own. So I wanted to look into that as well. And
what, are you thinking of leaving your husband, or?
I mean, it's too late for me.
There's time for your marriage to fuck up. It's cool.
Gemma's talking.
No, but I think there's time for sure. No, because I sort of went through that experience of finding out that I let my egg reserve was low. And I imagine, like, getting that news and, you know, acting on it. And I was lucky that I had Duncan, but, like, he does, you know, so.
Before I met my husband, actually, and it makes it sound like I just went out shopping for husband, but I, honest to God, I really was like, because I was getting on. And I was like, oh, I think I might have my, I was going to pay, I had some money left to me, and I was going to use it to pay for getting my eggs frozen, and I thought, you know, just do it on my own.
Yeah.
And then I met him and seduced him. No, I didn't really. No, it was love. It was love. I just feel like I've got to justify it now. I was like, he wasn't just used for his sperm, okay?
Okay.
Right, we're going to let you go, my love. Thank you so much.
Well,
thank you for sharing me. That.
And I hope I get to meet him one day. And he's been good as gold, James, hasn't he?
Hold him up.
I know, he's been good as gold. He's been good as gold next door with Dad. See, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah,
so go out and have that swim one night. Do
I'm
it.
Goody. Yeah.
All right. Thanks very much, Lizzie. Thanks very much, Gemma. Keep listening and subscribing and sharing. And we're on Patreon as well. And thank you. Goodbye.
You've been listening to the Funny Mummies podcast with me, Hattie Ashdown. Thank you to my panel and guests today. Edited and produced by Scott Kingsnorth in association with Screaming of Laughter, the lunchtime comedy club where babies can come too. These shows go out live on Soho Radio for the Other Woman show. See schedule for details. Please subscribe, rate and review and share this podcast. We really appreciate it, and it's the only way more people can find us. So see you next time for more Mum and Tonic.
Happy Mother's Day to you.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
During the Right Rug Flooring Anniversary Sale, we're celebrating 91 years of the guaranteed lowest prices with beautiful carpet with a lifetime stain warranty starting at $219 a square foot installed with pad. And luxury vinyl starts at $399 a square foot installed. Unbeatable prices and 24-month special financing available with approved credit. Schedule a free in-home appointment with our flooring experts at RITERUG.com. Right Rug Flooring's Anniversary Sale. Right.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.